Now, I'm going to talk about the stuff that I hate to talk about. I hate talking about this stuff because it really comes down to now, okay, we've kind of grounded a foundation for moral truth. That the best explanation for the stuff that's in the room we call moral truths is a source that's objective, transcendent, outside the room. And now, how does that affect us as police officers? So, my partners saw me become a Christian, and they knew me before I was a Christian, and then they saw me go through that transitional process, and boy, did I take abuse, right? Because I was so anti-Christian before I became a Christian, because the only Christians I knew were stupid people and people we were taking to jail. Those are the two groups. So if I asked my partners, why do you think Christianity is true? Can you give me 5 reasons why I should trust Scripture? Give me 4 evidences for the existence of God. They couldn't do it. I thought, really? So you would never take someone to jail that way, would you? This blind trust you have that this is true without even knowing evidentially if it is true? Yet you're willing to buy. Well, I don't get that. And then the people we were taking to jail would tell us, I watched a guy do we were on a surveillance team. I watched a guy do a bank robbery. I was in the bank when he did it. We chased him down afterwards. He had gotten saved at a harvest crusade like a year before. And I thought, okay, so either there's two groups. They're not very thoughtful, these people. They don't even know why it's true. And when they do think it's true, they don't behave differently. And what we're talking about in this session is that second part. Do we behave differently? I got asked by my chief years later. I retired as an officer. I still have 2 open cases I'm working, but they'll be forever before. I probably will never probably finish those, right, because I'm always so busy. But I was asked by my chief to develop an ethics program for our agency. And I thought, oh, it's going to be tough to teach ethics to police officers. Think about it. I think we know, we've experienced this repeatedly. I'm not talking about shootings we're seeing these days. I don't ever discuss shootings that are still being investigated. I worked officer-involved shootings, the OIS team, for years. I know better than to do that. But I think we can see a number over the years of episodes in which officers have even confessed to these things and been prosecuted for these things and been convicted for some of these things. Those are different kinds of cases. Those have already been adjudicated. And when, I don't know about you, but when I see that stuff, it makes me mad. Right? I mean, it's kind of like when you see a Christian do something that you know a Christian shouldn't do. It's like, oh, please, do me a favor. Stop calling yourself a Christian, okay? Because you're just embarrassing all of us. I had a case one time where the suspect had killed this woman in 1988. At the trial, and when I did the search warrant, I will tell you, he wrestled with this. He wrestled with it for about 15 years because there were 15 years worth of Bible studies in his living room at the search warrant. You could tell he had wrestled with God over this issue. But he wouldn't confess it to us. And at the trial, every day, he brought a Bible, and he sat at that desk. He had become a fire captain. He was a fire captain when I arrested him. And he sat at that desk with a Bible every single day. Do you think that helped him or hurt him? Think about how stupid that is. You're in the jury. You're in one of two groups. You're either Christians or you're not a Christian. If you're not a Christian and this knucklehead's got a Bible on the desk with him, what are you thinking? Yeah, there you go, Mr. Christian. It's not helping you. If you're a Christian on the jury, you see that Bible on the desk, what are you thinking? You hypocrite. It's not helping you either. This guy's not going to help either way. Why bring the Bible? That's how I kind of felt as I watched officers get in trouble, doing stuff they shouldn't do. And most of us, you and I, we would say we would never do that. We're not going to be in the news for crying out loud, but we have a personal life that can sometimes look about as scandalous as what we see in the news. And by the way, we didn't start off this way. When we started off, I'll bet you said something that affirmed a code that you thought you would never break. And also the people who are breaking the code probably felt the same way. Now, we have this thing at our agency that we call core values. How many of you guys and gals have something like that at your agency? Raise your hand if you have that. Are those stupid or what? Seriously, I hate them. I think they're a useless, pointless exercise, and some administrators decided to pay good money to some company to develop their core values. Really? We have a plaque It's in the hall of our agency in which these kinds of core values, it's got our mission statement and five core values of our agency. I doubt that most of us could even tell you what the core values are. We don't care about that. We walk by that plaque every day. It is not a part of who we are. Now, be honest. Isn't that true for some of you too in your agency? And every time someone comes to you and says you should adopt, it's like, dude, I'm not a bad person. Like, you need to teach me ethics? It's kind of insulting that you think you need to teach me ethics. You hire me. I've been doing this job. You let me carry a gun every day, and now you want to stop and do 2 days of ethics? Well, then why have you been trusting me with this gun for the last 15 years? Don't you feel that way sometimes? I felt that way. I think ethics training is dicey. None of us like to be trained. That's why cops are the hardest audience to speak to. Right? We just sit there like that. At least you're laughing. I feel great. I got three people to laugh today. That's a victory. I'm going home right now. Look, in the end, I think when it comes to behaviors, our agencies sometimes focus on the stuff that you see on the outside. We see the most important questions we can ask as an agency. Well, okay, what should we do? That's always a question. You're in the scenario. Have you ever had those kinds of things where they'll give you a scenario and they want to know how you would handle the scenario? What would you do? And the other issue, of course, is, well, how would you do it? How should you act under these certain conditions? You see your partner is stealing something. What would you say? You've heard those kinds of scenarios, right? We focus on these things, the what's and the how's, but most of the time, we don't get into this thing. The why should we care to begin with thing. It's hard to get us to agree as a group. I don't know about your agency, about 20%, maybe less, of our agency are believers. So if I'm going to, in my agency, talk about moral grounding, why should you do something? Why should you care? I probably can't do it from a Christian worldview. I can't even talk about it. My chief won't even allow me to talk about it. No one gets to know where I stand on that issue. I've got to teach ethics and answer that question, but not from a distinctly or uniquely Christian worldview. I've got to answer it another way. If I'm arguing that there is an objective, transcendent source of moral behavior, how am I going to do that if I'm talking to people who don't believe there is an objective, transcendent source? Is there something we can agree on? Even if we're not believers, I think there is. In the end, we have to be focused on this question, the why should we care question, because it turns out that that is what determines how we act and what we do. It all doesn't start here on the outside, it starts on the inside. What are we thinking about? What is valuable to us? What are our core values? Now, that's why we talk about core values. To me, that word is meaningless. What it all comes down to is, do you have a view of the world that makes sense? That dictates the way you behave as police officers. Now, I want to share with you what I think might be something that could unify all of us, even if you don't believe there is a God, that actually calls out law enforcement in a unique way. It transcends us. So it's the thing we can point to or think about that unifies us. Look, you see what's happening in the country right now, right? We are not unified. We aren't. And there's no longer a reasonable middle. There are just extreme edges on every conversation. Have you noticed that? Can you talk reasonably about anything right now in culture? No, because for the most part, we've gone through a political cycle where nothing is talked about in the reasonable middle. It's always talked about from the extremes, right? I get it. I don't have a problem with it. That's just where we are. They came to me about a year ago after the Dallas shootings, and they asked me to write a book on this entire division in the country between law enforcement and those who are opposed to law enforcement in one way or another. And I said, well, I did sketch it out. I had an outline for the work. I submitted it to the publisher. Regnery was going to publish it. They have Salem broadcast all the radio shows. I thought, well, this would be pretty widely read probably, and it was called Bridging the Thin Blue Line. And I didn't write it because I realized that there's no reasonable middle to write to right now. If you want to be in the worst position right now in culture to talk about what we're talking about, you don't want to be one of these five things. White, be honest. male, heterosexual, Christian, police officer. I had all five, okay? I'm out of the discussion. I get it. Besides, I don't think that that's the most important thing anyway. I've always said I never discuss. I have five pieces of content every week. We have a show on NRB. We have a podcast we do. We release videos every week, and we release three articles every week, and none of them are about cultural issues. They are all about one thing. Is the Bible true, and should you take it seriously? Because if we thought the Bible was true and we took it seriously, we'd be unified on all the other issues anyway. We're only divided because we either don't think it's true or we don't take it seriously. If we solve one of those two problems or both of them, we're going to be good to go. It turns out the one thing that would unify us, that would transcend us, is called the gospel. But we aren't allowed to talk about that in culture. So we're not allowed to talk about the one thing that would solve the problem. Anyway, I knew when I was teaching ethics, I had to figure out a way to talk about how we are different in a way that transcends every one of us. You might say, okay, well, how is it that law enforcement is different? Is it just because we get to shoot those great weapons? We give them away at raffles? Is that what it is? Is that what makes us unique? Is it because we train like crazy? Is it because we get paid a certain amount? A lot of us kind of came on for that reason. Do you know that's why I became a cop? I was in grad school at UCLA. I have a master's degree in architecture. I call it architorture, okay? That's what it felt like. But as I was working in Santa Monica, I visited my dad one day while he was working at the department. I had been a police explorer, so I was always kind of interested. But my dad was on duty that day. He was a sergeant working in dispatch. It was Thanksgiving Day. He had his feet up on the counter. He was watching the games on TV in the sergeant's office. I said, dude, what are you doing here on Thanksgiving Day? All these great games. He says, are you kidding me? I got six kids at home. I can't watch the games at home. I came to work so I could watch the games. I said, okay. I said, Dad, my dad divorced my mom when I was three, so we have more like a friend relationship than a dad relationship. I said, Dad, tell me, how many weeks of vacation do you get? He said, well, I put my days off, you know, we have deployment periods, I can put my days off with whatever. Just tell me, how many weeks each year are you not working? He'd been on the job about 30 years by that time. He said, about 12 weeks of vacation a year. I said, are you kidding me? I'm in the wrong profession. And I graduated on a Sunday, and I was in the academy on Monday morning. This is what I thought was different about law enforcement. He raised six kids, plus me, seven. I thought, wow, good job. I'm going to do that. But is that what makes it different? Is that why we love this job? Is it the fact we get to wear cool uniforms? Is that what we love about the job? You all know that it's none of those things. That is not what makes law enforcement different. Now, I'm going to try to illustrate for you what I think makes law enforcement different and why I think all of you in this room, if you're working in law enforcement, are singularly different than anyone else in culture. I'm going to illustrate it with an iPhone. How many of you guys have an iPhone? Okay. Or an Android, any kind of smartphone. But Apple is good because Apple's one singular company, one of the richest companies in the world today, probably in the top three, okay? And it turns out because iPhone exists, there are a ton of companies that make covers just for iPhones. If I was to ask all of you to hold up your iPhone, there would probably be like 50 different kinds of covers that we have purchased for our iPhones. You probably purchased two or three in the life of your iPhone. It turns out that these companies are existing because Apple creates an iPhone and creates a market for all of those people who own and make covers. In other words, Apple is at the root of this tree. And because Apple exists, there are things that grow in the tree, which would not be there if not for the fact that Apple existed first. Do you see how foundational? And by the way, the people at Apple, they get it. They know it. They know that their stuff is not just cutting-edge creative, that it is culturally cutting-edge, that what they are doing is they are shaping not only the economy and all the other things that are sold in our economy and how they are sold. Where would Amazon really be if it wasn't for mobile technology? They are at the root of all other technology right now. They're even at the root of how your kids are behaving. We're getting ready to write a book, a friend of mine, about teaching apologetics, Christian apologetics, to Gen Z high schoolers. As we study Gen Z, they'll say one thing in common, every study about Gen Z, they are digital natives. You and I, we are digital immigrants. We came to this later. They were born with it. They only know that world. This is why this generation is so wrapped around this world. That's how important. They take this work seriously. They see themselves as foundational. Really? That's us. That should be us. We should see ourselves this way. You know why? Because we are the one necessary, indispensable, foundational occupation. The only essential profession. When it comes down to things, there are either necessary things or contingent things that are dependent upon the necessary things. Necessary causes and contingent outcomes. Do you realize you are working in the one necessary profession? That's how important your work is. Nothing matters more than what you do. Why? Because law enforcement as a profession is at the root of the tree. None of these other professions would exist at all unless we were here first. We're the one necessary. The rest are all contingent. Do you see how important we are? You realize this because if you look at the Wild West, there was a time when if you go to any city in the Wild West, there wasn't a lot of commerce. There were people who were living in the Wild West, but the people who were living there all came after the foundational things. Hey, as a matter of fact, before there were doctors, before there were dentists or ironsmiths or firemen who were all volunteering, that's right, hose draggers used to volunteer, one was there first. The first paid employee is who? The sheriff. Why? No sheriff, no order, no ability to run businesses. Without order, you can't have commerce. So it turns out that here we are again, the one necessary, indispensable, foundational occupation. You don't believe me? Look at the history of our country. Here is the West Coast. When the West Coast was founded and settled, it was settled in regions. These regions where that were settled individually later became our counties, some of the largest counties in our state. Now, if you go back and look at the date of origin of the county sheriff's departments in the state of California, every one of those county sheriff's departments has got a plaque and it shows you what day it was founded. Well, Los Angeles, for example, was founded at the county sheriff's department in 1850. Coincidentally, all the other counties in Los Angeles were also founded in 1850. Why is that? Because the state of California was founded in 1850. And the very first essential, foundational, necessary profession was established because you can't have anything else. You can't have commerce, city councils, mayor's offices. You can't have any of that stuff until the sheriff's department is in place. We are more than noble, we're more than honorable, and we're more than virtuous. There are lots of other professions that are these things. We are law enforcement. We are foundational. Nothing happens unless you build it there. Do you see it? That's who you are. Now, you may have come to this like I did. Hey, this will pay the bills. But I'm glad I'm here. God used that mistake, really, a bad move. It wasn't a thoughtful move. It was a very utilitarian move. It was going to work for me. But he used it, and it turns out I was in the one now most noble, most necessary, most indispensable profession, just like you guys. Now, some of you got in the same position as me. You came into this the same way I came into it, but now you know better. Look, if Apple does well, all those secondary companies do well. If we are thriving and do well, all of these lifestyle issues, all of these cultural issues, all of these professions do well. By the way, if Apple does poorly, after 2008, it got a little bit tough. We lose some professions. But guess what? If we do poorly, it's much worse. Culture dies. All of culture dies. That's how important our work is. We're the one indispensable, necessary, essential profession. Now, it seems to me that once you get this and you grab this and you understand it, and by the way, when I first started teaching this to my agency, people from city council came over and said, stop teaching that. Because we have other office, we have other employment groups, right? Street department, fire, city public works. These people are essential to us too. Yeah, they might be essential, but they're not as essential as us. We are at the core. You can't have that guy trimming that tree if he's going to get stabbed in the back because you don't have order in your city. It turns out you have to have a police department here first before you can have that tree trimmer. Sorry. We are the one essential profession. Now, that's a huge responsibility. Are you ready for that responsibility? It's not what you thought it was. This is like Spider-Man important, okay? Did you watch that Spider-Man where the grandpa's dying and he says, with great power comes what? Great responsibility. That's what happens here. We have immense power and immense responsibility because that dead tree will be on our conscience if we allow it to die. Now, there's a nature of law enforcement we have to get, and we all agree. If you've played team sports, you already know this. If you haven't played team sports, you know it by watching team sports. That you could have people who are members of the team that are struggling, they have their own journey, or you could have members of the team that aren't even getting along. But in the end, it's not about this guy or this guy or this guy. It's about the team and what they do as a team. And the team is much deeper than the people who are on the platform. The team is also all of the people who are in support positions in law enforcement who are part of the platform. We typically don't think about these people, but all of those folks had trainers and administrators and people who booked their flights and all of that stuff, and they were all important because the thing here is not individuals. The thing here is the team. We can't, one sheriff won't get this town policed. You need an agency. This is the thing that transcends us. This is the thing we ought to see as more important than anything else. Let me put it another way. If we know that something is the most important thing, then I am willing to bend my knee to things to submit to that thing as the most important thing. Now, I was a youth pastor for about 6 years, then I was a lead pastor for 5. In those 11 years, I did a lot of weddings. And I would always say this at weddings. My wife would always get mad. But I would say, you know, as a kid growing up, my parents divorced very early. My mom never remarried. That shaped me. I was always angry about it. I always was. Today, I have an incredibly high value for marriage. Basically because my parents didn't. And I saw how that worked. So even before I met my wife, I was 17 when I met her. She was 15. I had this value. And I always tell her, I love marriage way more than I love you. Sorry. But if all of us loved marriage more than we love our wives, I want a great marriage. I love great marriage. So I have to actually, it turns out that love of this makes my love of this even more powerful. You can't love this and not take care of this. Make sense? But she's not my goal. Marriage is my goal. She happens to benefit from marriage being my goal. Now, for those of us who are Christians, we would say, well, it's the institution of, it's God. I will tell you, the idol in my life, the thing I have the hardest time surrendering as a Christian now, is that for years, my God was marriage. And now you want my God to be Yahweh? I'm having a hard time giving that up. I am. It's hard for me to go anywhere without Susie. I always tell her, I will not take an event. And I do 70 events a year between February 1 and December 1. I take December and January off. And I always tell her, I will not take an event if I can't tell you I will see you the day after tomorrow. If I can't say that, I don't go. Because I don't like going anywhere without her. If she's going to come, I'll go for 2 weeks. But if she's not coming, I'm not going. Why? I have a value for this. Now look, is there something similar that us as cops could say, there's this thing that is the highest value we ought to embrace as police officers And if we embrace that, then all the other stuff's going to work out okay, because if you care about this, this has to be cared about. I think there is a thing like this as cops that we could look to that is the foundation of everything, that if we cared about it more than anything else, it would change the way we work. It applies to cops. Now, cops, we're in a team setting. We know that it's all about team, right? My question is, what is the one thing about the one indispensable, singular, necessary, essential profession that should unify us? What is it? Now, I get asked to do this talk, and I always say, I hate using these words. It's not about professionalism, and it's not about ethics. Those are dirty words, if you ask me. Why? Because the culture uses these words so much that we don't even hear them as cops. We don't hear these words. These words are meaningless to us. Admit it. I mean, you're going to go to, would you actually go to a professional? If you don't think you're professional already, you shouldn't be wearing the uniform. That was my attitude. Don't tell me now about professionalism after you've been paying me to be professional for 15 years. I already know the rules. You don't need to remind me of the rules. So let me tell you what most ethics training in law enforcement agencies looks like. I'll be honest with you. It looks like something like this. It's called utilitarianism. Don't do that kind of stuff, because if you do and you get caught, it's going to ruin your life. It's going to ruin your career. It's going to bring shame on your department, shame on your marriage, shame on your kids. Don't do this stuff, because something bad is going to happen if you do. Now, most of you who have been involved in some form of ethics training, this has been the driving message. Even if it hasn't been said that way, the underlying driving message is don't do bad things, because if you do and you get caught, it's going to ruin you. And what are you thinking as a cop? If you're like me, I'm thinking, don't worry about it. You're not going to catch me. But in the end, there is something that unifies us, and we know it. It's a return to this thing that we see portrayed on TV, this thing that we see at funerals, at assemblies. We had an honor guard come on here and put these two flags in place. That stuff it happens to us, and we go, yeah, what is it about that unifies us? What is that one big trend? What is the heart of law enforcement that unifies all of us? That thing that's so foundational that if I just aim at that, I'll catch everything else. I'll tell you what I think it is. The heart of law enforcement is also the heart of police officers. And it comes down, if I said to you, okay, look, I want you to write down what you think the heart of it is. What do you think is the one core thing, the one thing that all of us, that defines what we do in law enforcement? I bet if I asked you to do that, you would offer any number of words to explain it. And how many times have you seen these words in one of your vision statements? Blah, 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 blah. But there is something, man. I got a history in my own family that goes back 56 years. There's something that unifies all of us. What is it? Okay, I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's selflessness. This is the one thing that we get like no other profession. We're willing to die for each other. We're willing to put something in front of ourselves. You're willing to take a bullet for your partners. You're willing to take a bullet for your community. You know that's part of this job. That changes everything. You can't do law enforcement. You can't be a part of this team unless you have this mentality as your DNA. Why? Because you are the one most important, essential, foundational group. And that group has to be willing to take a bullet. When my mayor said, you can't teach that, I said, time out. I am not saying that we're at the top of the tree. I'm saying we're at the bottom of the tree. We're the foundation of all modern civilization, not the benefit of civilization. We're at the foundation. Remember, the dog does not pee in the top of the tree. The dog pees at the base. So this is not a place we want to be, right? Okay, but that's where we are. This is not something we say, oh, this makes us special. No, this makes us special. It all comes down to selflessness. We're not asking our tree trimmers to die for their job. They're going to call us when they get in trouble. They want us to die for them. Selflessness then starts to appear as a template for me. And I can now run everything through this template. And selflessness is going to emerge through some form of humility or transparency or self-restraint. I'm sorry, it is. Because selflessness is the DNA of law enforcement. This is what we do. But it's not about the cool uniforms. It's not about the cool toys and, you know, cool details we get to work. It's not about any of that. I'll tell you, for me, at least initially, and maybe for some of you, it was about it paid well. But if you heard that in an oral board, would you hire that guy? Seriously, would you hire that guy? No, you wouldn't hire that guy. That's why the guys that feel this way or gals that feel this way, they lie. In the oral board, I guarantee you, you said something, even if you weren't a Christian or didn't even believe this was all that important. When you were interviewed, you didn't say that. You said something like this. You said something like, I want to serve the public. I want to help those in need. Even if you didn't, you said that because you knew that there was a DNA for law enforcement that required you to be what? To be selfless. That is the thing that unifies all of us in this room. That is the one core value that makes sense if we are, in fact, the one necessary, essential, foundational occupation. And we are. And this is why we are. Because we are singularly selfless. The same could be said, don't get me wrong, of the military, right? Because on a national level, who's protecting our nation? We do that on the local level. And by the way, there are only three things that will train wreck this in your life. Only three things that will get you in trouble. Because they're the three ways that each of us becomes selfish. I learned this working homicides. There are only three reasons why anyone commits a murder. Only three. Once you know the three, you can solve crimes. By the way, the same three reasons why anyone commits a theft, the same three reasons why anyone lies, the same three reasons why you have ever committed any sin, anything you called a sin as a Christian, only three things. If you want to protect yourself from all three things, you only have to protect yourself in these three areas, and they're pretty obvious. It's all about you thinking you're more important than anyone else when it comes to money, sex, or power. When I started a church, I knew church leaders fall. If I want to protect myself from falling, I have to protect myself in these three areas. I said, number one, we will never draw a salary. It'll never be about money. I work as a police detective. That'll be our income. I will do it bivocationally for free. I got to protect myself in that area. Two, I will never do anything without Susie at my side. I'm going to protect myself in this area. Three, I will never have a church of more than 50 people. At 50, we launched another church. And I'm not in charge of that church. I don't even care what you do with that church. I only want 50. Why? Because you can't get too full of yourself when you only have a church of 50. You got to protect yourself in those three areas. Does that make sense? These are the three ways that all of us get distracted, that we go afield, that we start walking down the wrong path. We walk down that path because we're chasing money, sex, or power. Every murder I've ever worked is for money, sex, or power. When one gangster shoots another one, it's a nuanced version of power. He disrespected me. Well, it's a power-authority issue. It's in the third category. Police have to be selfless in these three areas. So I'll leave you with how I use this as a filter. Because I realize now that if I love my marriage, it has to change certain ways I behave. If I love selflessness, then every decision I make has to be filtered. Before I do anything, it has to be filtered through a filter that I call selflessness. In other words, am I doing this to serve myself, or am I doing this to serve others? Now, isn't that interesting? That happens to be the uniquely Christian moral ethic, right? But forget about that for a second. If you want to do this job, you've already signed on to selflessness. That's why you wear a bulletproof vest. You might need it because you're willing to step in front of a bullet. You already know that this is your goal. This should unify us. If this does unify us, then I don't need to give you a code of ethics. I simply need to ask you, hey, you're about to do that? Before you do it, would you run it through this filter? Why'd you stop that girl? Really? Is that about you? Something you wanted from her? Why are you looking at that money that way? What, you've just been dealt with $600,000 in cash and how many kilos? How you going to take that? Why would you take that? Everything you do from this point on, ask yourself, are you doing this for pursuit of self, or are you doing this out of selflessness? Then all the other words will fall through that filter, and it all comes down to one of these three things. Am I chasing money? Am I chasing sex? Am I chasing power? So we had this five-word mission statement, right? Useless. It's useless unless we run it through the filter of selflessness. You want service to be one of your keywords? Really? Okay, you can serve yourself. To say that service is a value only makes sense if you mean selfless service is a value. Because I've known people who have served their own cause. How many people do you know who will behave a certain way for those 2 years before they want to promote? Then they look really good in the oral board, right? They weren't acting that way because they cared about us or anyone else but themselves. They were serving selfishly. Make sense? Serving their own cause. All of these words we use in ours, we use this word excellence. Well, what does excellence mean? Is this my way of puffing up and separating from you? Sometimes it can be that way. We talk about integrity. Only when you want it? We talk about compassion. Who am I compassionate to? The people who serve me? I'll be compassionate if it benefits me? We all do that, by the way. This issue of pride, we actually have pride as part of our mission statement. I don't know about you, but as a believer, this is a dangerous word. Pride puffs up. Pride's what caused the fall. Pride can be very negative, unless, of course, it's selfless. It turns out all of these decisions simply have to be run through that filter of selflessness. Now, we are 13 minutes from our break. So I'm actually going to take questions from you guys. Because that's really all I prepared to give you. Because we're about to spend the afternoon talking about ways in which our worldview affects our marriage, affects all kinds of other things. But I want to answer any questions you have before we get there. I know tonight when we get to questions, it may not be related to the two talks I just gave. Also, any questions about God's existence or any problem of evil or anything that you think you want to ask about the Christian worldview, this is the time to do it. And I know that the first question is hard to ask, so we're going to skip it and go to the second question. Why don't we have a quote Billy Graham in this country anymore? I'll say, well, I think it is. I think it's because what's happened is in the modern era, starting about 30 years ago, we realized there was a strong, and what offends young Christians the most is the connection between faith systems and politics. Most young people would be more interested in the faith system if it wasn't so deeply connected to the political system. And let's face it, James Dobson, Billy Graham, these are folks of the same generation, or pretty close, who really connected those two things well. And I think that they have to be connected. I'm not somebody who thinks you should stay out of politics, but I think it's the identification with one side of politics or another. Do you know why I'm J. Warner Wallace? Because there's a Jim Wallace from Sojourners in Washington, D.C., who wrote a book called God's Politics. And he is very much of the opposite extreme of that I am in politics. We were at a conference in Washington, D.C. together, so I had a chance to meet him and tell him, hey, you're the reason why I had to change my name, because they thought I was you. And by the way, nobody wanted him on their radio show. So I couldn't do radio being introduced as Jim Wallace anymore. So I became J. Warner Wallace. Why? Because people have now associated our religious belief with one form of political stance or another. And that's why I don't think the next generation does not want to have those two things affiliated. So they're less inclined to step up as in another Billy Graham. Follow me? Because they see that the Billy Grahams of the world, they think, are aligned politically, and they're really just doing politics. And what they're looking for is a more authentic version of the Christian faith. That's why I think it's going to be harder to draw someone out of that generation, either millennials or Gen Z, who would be interested in taking the place of a Billy Graham. But are there great evangelists who are really not political? Yes. Now, you may not like them. You know, of course, the thing's going to be theologically, where do you stand theologically? But I can think of one in Southern California who is becoming more and more well-known nationally. His name is Greg Laurie. So Greg does, I think he's kind of taking the stand as probably the foremost evangelist in the country right now. He does harvest crusades. So I think there are people out there, but we don't see them as much because they're not politically aligned. And again, I always say that what's more important to me is to draw you to it. Is the Bible true, and should you take it seriously? Because what we have is an entire set of denominations who think the Bible is true, but they don't take it seriously. And they twist out certain things or take out certain things. Those of us who think it's true and take it seriously are probably in the more conservative churches in America, right? But so that's why I focus on those two issues alone. I will never. This is a talk that Jim asked me to give for you guys. It's part of what I do, a six-week seminar on ethics for law enforcement. But for the most part, I don't talk about those issues. I just talk about, is there a God? Is the Bible true? If I think if you solve those two things, that's kind of the root of the tree. Everything else springs out of that. So you know, today we talked about, everyone heard that question, how do we basically incorporate our Christian faith in workplaces where we not, that might not even be anymore, we're losing the right to do it. I mean, some of these agencies will actually exclude this kind of. But if you noticed, what we talked about in the first session, that's pretty much how I approach all of it. If I'm going to make a case for God from the beginning of the universe, or the fine-tuning of the universe, or just consciousness, or just free agency, I will never quote Scripture. Because that didn't help me. That wasn't what I wanted to hear. So all of my conversations with police officers are based in the moment on something we just experienced that I can argue has a better explanation outside the room than inside the room. And although that doesn't take you all the way, what I typically say is that evangelism is not a game of tennis. I hit the ball, you hit the ball back. If I hit the ball just on the outside of the line, it's all my fault. We sometimes think if we're talking to our friends, we need to get them to the gospel. Like, say yes to the gospel. Like, we want to you know, win every contest. That's not what evangelism is. Evangelism is a game of baseball. And it's not about hitting home runs. How many of you interview suspects? I very seldom make it my goal to get the cop out. Yeah, I want a cop out. But to be honest with you, if I can show to the jury down the road that he's lied 15 times in these ways, I can hit singles and doubles and triples. I don't need a home run. In the end, those singles, doubles, and triples will destroy this guy in front of a jury. Now, I might get a home run. He might confess to it. But if he doesn't, I still want my singles, doubles, and triples. Same is true with this kind of work I'm doing with people in my community who are not Christians. I'm not looking to hit a home run. I don't need you to come drop on your knees and accept Jesus as Lord today. I just need you to take something seriously that you didn't take seriously before. In other words, I need to put a stone in your shoe so that after you're walking on it a while, you pull that shoe off and you go, dang, this has been bugging me. Because you really can't explain this thing. Look, I was challenged by a pastor who said, Jesus is the smartest man who ever lived. It's the teaching of Jesus that shapes all we know in Western culture. Why do you think it's the way it is? Morality. Why do you think it's Judeo-Christian culture right from the mouth of Jesus of Nazareth? Really? I was thinking, I'm a guy who's enforcing those laws. I was a police officer. He's claiming that this is the source of those laws. Please. Really? Give me a break. I bought a Bible. I thought that can't be true. That's the stone that was in my shoe that I had to get out. So in the end, what I'm looking for here is, hey, if you're in your workplace, you don't have to get a home run. It's about taking that moment when your six-year-old has been executed by his father and you're working the death scene and you're standing there watching this, and this is truly horrific. And the guy next to you knows not a believer and he's trying to process this horrific scene too. Is there something I can say that makes sense of evil that just moves him 90 feet to the first base? Your job is not to hit home runs. You're not Aaron Judge. Your job is to make contact with the ball. That's it. Get off your butt. Just get up there to the plate. Make contact. Yeah, that sucked. I didn't really get it. You don't know what you just did. You don't know if you advanced the player. You probably did. You just don't even know you did. And by the way, when someone comes home and comes to faith, don't get too cocky. Okay, that dude was on third base leaning in. All you did was you bunted him home. Don't get too full of yourself, okay? So it's really about us trying to figure out how we work in the workplace and being satisfied by making baby steps with people, and I am. I don't have to say, well, if I can't get a Bible study started here, I cannot affect any change in my agency. No, I can affect change just by mastering the worldview. All of us should have this. By the way, you guys know so much stuff. The important stuff that's in the penal codes, you've memorized it. But guess what? Why you think that team is going to get past the pennant race? You've also memorized that junk. Yesterday, I was on the plane coming home from Green Bay, or 2 days ago, whatever it was. The point is, I'm on the plane coming home from Green Bay. I had some work with the Packers. I don't know. Sorry. Yeah, I know you're going to say that. But so anyway, so I'm on the plane coming home, and there's a guy behind me, and he's talking baseball with his friend. I'm not a baseball guy. Okay, I'm just not. But he's talking about, well, okay, so how many throws did he have? How many pitches did he pitch? That he's like, he's got an idea of like not only who's who in the zoo, but how many pitches they do per inning and how many. He had so much information in his head. That's all of us. All I'm suggesting is it's time to dump that stuff out and fill it up with what really matters, to reprioritize. Because most of us can make a case for whatever your favorite team is, but you can't make a case for why you think God is the best explanation for morality. Well, I guess what? Only one of those cases actually matters in the end. So it's a matter of us transferring our knowledge, right? Trying kind of, what are you spending your time with? I can't tell you how much my podcast, because I've traveled too much, my podcasts are evenly divided between politics, theology, and sports. Probably not evenly, probably half sports, the other half are politics and theology. But sports is a lot of what I listen to, right? All the ESPN shows, all the Fox Sport 1 shows. I listen to all of those on a daily basis. My wife says, really? How much time are you investing in that nonsense? I don't know. I just need a break sometimes, so I invest it there, right? But the reality of it is that none of that stuff matters. What matters really is the stuff that we've been walking right by, that we haven't even thought about, and how all of it points to the existence of a creator.